Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening. Production.
Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in to the Wednesday edition of The Drive, our final show before Thanksgiving tomorrow. We will have no show tomorrow, and we wish everyone a safe and happy Thanksgiving. We are here right as Auburn basketball is about to get started in the championship of the Maui Invitational, the Tigers. It'll be a matchup of Tigers. Here, I'll tell you what, I can plug it into this one. Jason. Jason Caldwell from Auburn Undercover is here with us, and we had sort of positioned Jason in Dan's spot where he could see the TV.
It's my microphone feed thing over there.
That's, yeah. Well, that's what I said. I could plug it into my headset, and he could have still sat there.
We'll figure it out during a commercial break.
Well, yeah, I mean, whatever. But yes, we are coming on as Auburn about to play for the title in Maui against the Memphis Tigers, to a pair of 6-0 teams after Auburn last night, late night, destroying North Carolina, Dan.
Yeah, you kept thinking maybe there'd be a Carolina run in the second half that made it a single digit game for an extended period of time.
They had the ball twice with an opportunity to cut it to a single digits.
But for the most part, Auburn did everything you needed to do to hold off a team trying to come back in a game where Auburn had built an overwhelming lead. I mean, pretty early. I mean,
Auburn had a 21. Auburn jumped 21 out to six. A 21-6 lead about 4 minutes in.
Yeah, very early. Auburn, assumed control of this game, and it played out remarkably. I mean, even though no one on the court is the same, it played out a lot like the time when Auburn beat North Carolina in the Sweet 16. Like the last time these two teams played each other, it was a similar deal. Auburn hitting threes early, sort of being dared by the Carolina defense to hit threes early. They did exactly that.
Well, and this time it was because they could not stop. Jani Broome was unbelievable early on. He had 13 or 15 of Auburn's 21 as Auburn jumped out to that 21-6 lead.
That's the difference. You look at it and you grow up thinking about North Carolina. You think about talent and all these guys. They've got some talent on that team, but it's two guards, and they're not real big either. Mm-hmm. That's not a big North Carolina basketball team, not a big athletic team either, and it's going to be a much different challenge tonight. Now, Memphis isn't as skilled. Now, they got a couple of guys that can shoot it, but this is a much bigger, much more athletic, longer team that Auburn's going to face tonight, and so I think it's going to be a more physical game than they – when you let Auburn be the more physical team in a game, and they're going to dominate you, and that'll be a little bit more of a challenge tonight.
It'll be a rematch for Moussa Cisse, right? Because that's a guy who was Ole Miss's big man in a couple of matchups last year against Jani Broome. He's a Memphis transfer, and that's going to be down low. I mean, it just feels like it feels like the low post is so important when Auburn is playing, because teams, they have to base their game plan around Jani and Dylan. And teams,
really Dylan.
Although I think Dylan defensively can impact.
Defensively, but you don't have to get. I went back and looked, and in two games, he has 6.6 rebounds in 34 minutes, and he's played good defense.
Right.
Sooner or later, somebody's going to go, you know what? I'm going to make that guy do something, and I'm going to double Jani every time he touches the basketball. I won't be surprised if that's today.
Well, they didn't double him when he was outside the arc to begin the game, and he hit a three.
Yeah, and so I think the ball's got to come out of his hands if I'm playing Auburn.
And the thing is, he also has had
– He's a good passer.
Yeah, and he just had an assist right now. Auburn out to a 7-0 lead here in the first couple of minutes of
this
ball game.
That's the thing. I think you're building the momentum. Today's going to be about, can you keep your legs? Can you keep your wind after having such a short turnaround? But I think you look and, if Jani passes the ball, if you can make shots, and again, this is the Memphis team that when they're running and playing offense, they can really go. But
they
if you defend them and guard them, then it takes away a lot of the things they want to do.
And that's what Auburn does that so well. They're such a good defensive team.
That's where the depth can come
into
play.
They distribute it so well. Yesterday, we talked about Janai, and Janai was phenomenal in the first half. He had 18 points and 10 rebounds at the half yesterday. But then in the second half, he only had one bucket, but Auburn got five other players in double figures.
Yeah,
players in double figures.
I think Chris Moore, J.P. Pegues, Todd Pettiford, those guys become really important in a game like this.
Chaney came back after getting in foul trouble in game one.
Chaney plays more minutes than Dylan does most of the time. Mm-hmm. Dylan got in foul trouble. And so I think you look at it, those next six, seven, eight, nine guys – are going to be guys that be really important in a game like this.
Auburn, the way they've looked in this tournament so far, I think it's reasonable to assume that if Auburn can beat Memphis today,
they're going to be number two.
I think they're going to be number one team in the country.
I wonder if they will bump Kansas, even though Kansas hasn't lost. I think they'll be no lower than two with Gonzaga going down in overtime just a few minutes ago.
The Kansas argument is going to be the one to make. Like did Kansas do enough beating Duke in the game, despite Hunter Dickinson being ejected? I think that's Auburn probably has a better resume than Kansas. You might move. I think Kansas probably retains, but I think Auburn could jump to at least two, and maybe get their fair share of number one votes.
They should
finish
this off. Yeah,
my goodness, and they are out to a blazing start. Memphis having Penny Hardaway already having to call timeout. 17:41 to go, and Auburn's up nine already. Janai Broom hit a three. Chad Baker-Mazzara, Miles Kelly, and Dylan Cardwell have already scored.
Auburn hasn't missed a shot. And
Auburn's 4-for-4.
Memphis comes out of the timeout with a play that results in an air ball, but they get the offensive rebound and the putback, so they are on the board. But a 9-0 start for Auburn, and sort of exactly what Auburn would have wanted to begin a game where they're in pursuit of. It'd be the first SEC team in over 30 years.
And just the third SEC team ever
to win the Maui.
I'm assuming it would be Arkansas and Kentucky would be the only other ones.
It's Kentucky and Vandy, as a matter of fact.
Vandy will Purdue way back. Yep. It's been a long time. I'm surprised Memphis has never played for a championship in Maui. And you would think about that somewhere along the line they would have been involved with
You would think.
Way back.
Back to the 70s, 80s,
And I think the actual tournament didn't start until after Chaminade beat Ralph Sampson. Then they said, hey, we need to do this every year.
Right.
So that would have been past the Keith Lee, those kind of teams. But they've been pretty good since then.
It speaks to how big this moment is and how exciting the basketball team is that we're this deep into –
It's Wednesday of Iron Bowl week, and we have not mentioned anything except basketball.
Yeah.
But I mean, basketball is going right now.
This is the preseason non-conference tournament in the country. This is the one because of when it takes place. Because this is the one that has the most prestige of any other tournament. Now you have a couple of these they put together going, the Champions Challenge or whatever it is, from a tournament setting. Where you're playing three games, 3 days. To me, this is the one that you point to in terms of college basketball.
Jason Caldwell from Auburn Undercover with us. Bill and Dan here in the studio. Dan's at the controls as Drew is off for the rest of the week for Thanksgiving.
I assume we're on the air. We're not getting panicked phone calls from the usual people that would tell us. You know what I mean? So I think things are going.
They may be watching the ball
game. Oh, they might be watching the ball. Well, but everything. I believe I've pushed all the correct buttons to have us transmitting.
Yes. Well, we'd love for you to join. Love for you to join in. I mean, if you want to, if you're watching the basketball game, you can call us at breaks. 334-321-1390 is the Drive hotline sponsored by Skybar.
Yeah, and our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors sponsor the podcast, available however you get your podcasts. They also sponsor the text box, 334-564-1840. I do not want to do sort of alternate commentary of like a TV feed.
We're not going to give you every basket.
Auburn off to a hot start. I do want to.
We can update you like it breaks timeouts. Auburn's their first break. The under 16 timeout. Auburn's up 6-13-7.
Yeah, I think the right call is to pivot to football in the next segment. But I do want to ask Jason, two games into this Maui tournament, like what's impressed you the most about the way Auburn's played against Iowa State and North Carolina?
Yeah, I think it's probably the veteran thing. You know, that's what we talked about. This is a team that has a bunch of guys that play a lot of basketball, and you look at it, and there's just no situation where they go, they're overwhelming. You can't. It's hard to get off to a worse start than they did against Iowa State, and you're like, okay, well, just go make some plays, make some shots, and get back in the game, and you kind of take it over in the second half. So, I think it's probably been that. The other thing to me is, you look at the potential firepower for this team, and we've talked about it. Like, this team has more firepower than any Bruce Pearl team we've seen. Doesn't always guarantee that you're going to score like that. But in the past, we said, well, if it wasn't this guy or this guy, then they're going to have problems scoring. And now you look and you go, yeah, if it's not this guy, and if it's not this guy, and if it's not that guy, and if it's not that guy, then they still have another guy.
Like there are four guys, at least four, that I feel like at any time can score 20 points.
Well, and you think about it, you think obviously Chad Baker Mazzara has really become
absolutely
the second guy.
Miles Kelly is a proven scorer.
And then we've seen Denver Jones. We know that guy can score. And then we haven't talked about Tahad, who has scored
Pettiford
over 20 against Houston already this year. Chaney Johnson has been kind of the steady. And that's the thing for me is that you look at the depth of scoring options. That's not normally what you think about with Bruce Pearl and Auburn.
The way Tahad has been willing to step into the moment, not in a way that sort of, you know, that would step on the toes of his teammates, but in a moment where Auburn needs a basket from the perimeter, right? And Tahad Pettiford's willing to against Iowa State, right? And multiple times.
Moment definitely isn't too big for him.
No. And Miles Kelly's taking shots from Los Angeles in this tournament, right?
He's hit some.
I mean, he's one of them, at least one of them is in front of our buddy Justin Ferguson, and Justin Ferguson sort of surprised the other people because there aren't that many Auburn people courtside. If you look in both games, you can see Ferguson on the left side on the front row of the press, so he's like sort of in the lower part of your screen. In the sky blue shirt and the hat, and he's like, I think there's a Miles Kelly three where Ferg, you know, he knows before anybody else there at press row that this guy's shooting from like he's in his spot and shooting, and Auburn's been able to get contributions from a lot. I mean it's so vital. Bench points and bench minutes are so vital for this team because it allows you to have Jani Broome and Chad Baker Mazzara ready and able to impact high leverage moments at the end. Like they're, I mean, you can get not only can you play at the pace you want to play at offensively and defensively when you have a bench that can contribute, but you can also, your star players aren't overextended at the end of games.
Yeah,
and that's something other teams really struggle with that against Auburn and having Chris and.
I think you have to play those guys more because normally when you're tired and you're a little dead-legged, the first thing that goes are your legs, and then you start reaching and fouling. And this team has an issue with that anyway. And so I think, can you stay under control? I know Dylan's already had a couple of ball fakes in some situations. Those are things that, to me, that's the one thing that can derail you is a couple of guys getting foul trouble and you're tired. Then it starts to shorten that bench a little bit. That can be an issue, and maybe adrenaline too, because you get out so quick. You go, man, you're rolling. Okay, you settle in the game. All of a sudden, you're
even more tired.
Yes, we'll see how they can kind of weather this little storm, maybe from Memphis coming out.
One trademark that comes to mind too, if I think about like Billy Donovan's, you know, the champion Gators, you know, from 20 years ago, or I say from 20 years ago, Al Horford's still in the league. But you know, still, like, I mean, but those, you know, those Gators from, you know, from the 06-07, or even Coach K's best teams, like, they were so good coming out of halftime. Like, the first 5-7 minutes of those games, you know, they knew, hey, you only have 20 minutes left, and those first 5-7 can really, that can dictate how the second half is going to go. And Auburn against Houston, and especially against Iowa State, but it was, you know, against North Carolina too.
Oh yeah,
I mean Auburn
both has, but I mean you're right. Second half was same.
Complete control of the first 5-7 minutes of the second half. You know, the beginning of the third quarter, if you will, and that's the mark of a. I mean that's the mark of a great team with some killer instinct, like a team that knows when it's time to put the other team away. And Auburn's been able to do that in three opportunities against top 15 opponents this year.
Mm-hmm. All right, we will get to our first break of the afternoon. We'll keep you updated on what's going on in Maui. Jason Caldwell with us here in hour number one. On the day before Thanksgiving, we will turn to the Iron Bowl. When we come back, love for you to join in here on the Wednesday Drive.
For air that is cool and clean, call SensiGreen, 334-641-5450. East Alabama's premier carrier dealer, the team at SensiGreen.
Auburn Opelika Sports Leader, ESPN 106.7.
Welcome back into the Wednesday Drive. Bill and Dan, joined by Jason Caldwell here in the studio. Love for you to join in as well. We understand Auburn basketball is going on right now over on Wings 94.3. And nearing the midway mark of the first half, Auburn up 20-13. We'll keep you updated on that, though. But let's turn to football, Jason. An absolutely desperately needed win for Auburn this past Saturday night in such a great atmosphere at Jordan-Hare Stadium.
Yeah, it was a really interesting game because for, you know, quarter and a half, and honestly, I was talking to this with somebody else today. I said, since really the Arkansas game, Auburn really hasn't played a bad football game.
No,
they didn't they didn't play great against Vandy. But they battled in a day when Vandy was like, hey, we're going to make this game ugly. You didn't make many plays on offense, but you haven't played bad. And so you look at it and go, that was by far the best game you played offensively.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it was defensively.
Nor do I. Auburn couldn't get A&M off the field at certain
times. You made some stops when you needed them. But that was the first time, even this season, I thought that Auburn's defense got exposed a little bit for not being good enough in the middle of the front line.
Can I say too, Bill? And I don't want to be negative. All right, I want to be very careful about this. But because this is a compliment, this is ultimately a compliment. You mentioned the atmosphere, and I full disclosure, I was in Alaska, right? I was consuming. You know, I was watching the game.
You experienced some of that, though. I mean, it wasn't like we've never seen anything.
How about this? Like, I think the atmosphere hasn't been an issue at Jordan-Hare Stadium
season. The first time.
It was the first conference night game.
Well, the thing is, the fact that it continued, the fans continued to be there after Auburn couldn't get wins time after time after time. I've credited the team for continuing to fight and compete. The fans have too.
All season long. There was concern after, like, what kind of crowd would there be for the Vandy game?
Yeah.
And it was great. The crowd was great. Like, the on field it didn't go as planned, but the crowd was great for the Vandy game.
There was
concern. ULM. People remember, I mean, there was
great crowd. It was probably 80,000 people for ULM at 11:45 for a 3-6 football team.
So I just want to say, as much as people, and I understand why, and Auburn winning makes it all the more special, but those folks showed up all season long.
And players have noticed it. Hugh Freeze has noticed it. The coaches have noticed it. Recruits have noticed it. It's been a big part of this season. People want to go, hey, how do you hold on to this guy? How do you hold on to that guy? That's how you hold on to people. That and showing them, look, we told you, we're making progress. Still not there yet. But Saturday night was the example of, look, I told you, we're going to get there. It's just going to take a little time. And that was the first tangible proof that those people have had. I mean, it was a win over Texas A&M. And it took a long time. How different of a feel has it been since Saturday night at midnight?
No, you're not
kidding.
It's
a completely different feel. I think it was a huge moment. And look, you go, hey, the senior guys stepped up, made some plays in that game. The young guys made some plays in that game. And then you think about, okay, what does it take to get to the next level? You're closer now. To me, their record's not as good. This is a much better football team than they have been the last 2 years, in my opinion. I think they're a lot better football
Auburn
team.
Auburn is? Yes,
correct.
If Hugh Freeze can do some of the things that other coaches have done at Auburn University in football or even more, but if he can match – you know, the championships of previous head coaches, then I think that victory over A&M is going to be a pretty important moment in the story, right?
Yeah.
Like, if this thing ends in...
Yeah. Correct. Oh, yeah.
If this thing ends in success...
You look back 3 years from now, and you go, hey, they've played for a national championship. you will point back to that game as going, that is one of the standalone reasons why it got there, or a part of why you got there.
I would think, and maybe I'm just trying to find a game you could say that about. I would think maybe West Virginia felt like that for Chizik a little bit. It was very early in Chizik's tenure, and he had success like a year later. But a game where the mood sort of turned because Auburn was down early in that one, and there was terrible weather, and you sort of thought, it's not really comparable because Chizik didn't face 2+ years of heartbreaking losses.
It was probably happened the same year, but it was probably the Clemson game in 2010. Honestly, it was the same year.
I would think
where they drop a pass.
That's right. Drop that pass.
You win one in overtime, and you go. Oh my goodness. Okay, there you go.
Maybe a Bruce Pearl victory that you can find a comparison to that sort of set the stage because Bruce Pearl had a couple of years.
It was the SEC tournament early.
Hey,
look, I'm telling you, we're gonna get there.
Yeah, go on that.
You
run,
have the struggles, right. But I'm telling you, we're gonna get there. And then you go, man, I see it. And you get a couple of players, and you do those things. And here's the other part of this one. I firmly believe that if they said in week two, boy, you know what? I thought we were going to be able to throw the football. We're not as good at it. Let's just line up and run it. I firmly believe you probably would have won a couple more games to this point. You might be seven. You might have won seven games. But I don't think you get to where you want to go by abandoning and just going, well, let's just run it, play close to the, like they did last year. They had to do that.
You would have won a couple
more games, but you're not going to advance as a program by doing it that way. And I think you go, hey, you know what? We have to do these things.
We've got to show the kids what you're wanting to be doing.
Because if you don't do those things in the middle of the year, Cam Coleman isn't playing the way he is now.
Right.
You're just going, oh, well, here we are. Just go out there and run around and block somebody. He's not even involved. No. Build a program or build a team. And it feels like, hey, they could have built a team better this year, but I think they're on a track to building the program for more stability and more success down the road than had you just said, oh, well, we're just going to run the ball.
Is the thinking there that if Auburn had tried a really conservative approach offensively all
Correct.
Season long? Here's me rephrasing that too.
Correct.
It's like if Auburn tries a very conservative approach offensively all season long, you still have to replace Peyton Thorne in the offseason.
Yes.
With a quarterback from the transfer portal
who you haven't sold that you're going to do anything offensive.
I don't know that I want to come in and hand off.
Hey, and your wide receiver's going.
If there's why do we stick around?
The question, would be what's the message you're selling? If you take a conservative approach offensively all season long, even if it works to a degree,
that's my part. Is that's not who you are. That's not who you want to be. Now here's the thing: if you felt like your defense was South Carolina good, even just South Carolina good, where you said, you know what, we might go win 11 games by playing that way if you don't make mistakes, do that. Then maybe you have a little bit more of an argument. This defense wasn't going to be that good. They played solid.
If you bring back every underclassman with eligibility,
you add the defensive lineman that Auburn's trying to. That's what they've got.
The pieces on the perimeter to be that good. Can your young guys and maybe a transfer to? Can you find guys in the middle that can whip somebody?
Yeah.
I talked to somebody that played this game a long time, and they were talking about it last week, and they said, look, until you have somebody on the middle that they have to double team, you're just not going to be very good.
There are certain things you can't do.
The first thing you can't do is, if we saw it Saturday, the first thing you can't do is you can't say, hey, we're going to rush four, and we're going to get home, and we're going to impact the quarterback. When you can't do that, then you are in serious trouble in key moments because you either send seven against a guy that can run it and have to play man in the perimeter, or you rush three or four and have to sit back there and cover for a while. And you have to do a little bit of both because there's no way that you can do one or the other all the time. Whereas you look at South Carolina, you look at Oklahoma, that's what their front is so good that they said, you know what, we don't have to rush eight guys. We can get pressure with three or four, and we can impact you running the football, and that's the key for them. I just don't think Auburn's quite there yet.
And see, that's where I think some folks go, well, Auburn statistically is about as good as Oklahoma. They ought to be able to do the same thing. They're not built the same way.
No, and statistically they are, but Oklahoma, I mean, people have complained about Auburn's offense this season. Oklahoma's offense has been awful. Now, they just lined up and ran a football
right.
the other day. They did it power running with a quarterback, but their defense got them turnovers, and they got the ball back. That's still the thing we look at. Now, Auburn's played 11 games, created 9 total turnovers on defense.
Right.
And that's hard. Like, you've played really good defense, and you've bent, and you've held, and you've done these things. But it's going to take getting the ball back a couple times Saturday, I think, to
get a great shot. Yeah, I think Alabama's got to help. And that's the thing. It's Alabama has been – we talked about how consistent Auburn has competed, and they've been there. Alabama has been wildly inconsistent this year. When they're good – they are very good.
Well, yeah, and
but they can be pretty bad.
Because here's the thing about it: you look at that roster; they haven't played great at times. I just ran through the defense yesterday, and I went former five star, and you start running down the list and go, I got to about 9, and that's just on about the top 16 guys on defense. There are 9 of those guys that are former five-star guys.
And a lot of them you remember from, well before
A couple have transferred in. USC, Damani Jackson at corner has transferred in. They got a true freshman corner that is a former five-star. And then you think about, up front, especially James Smith and think about Quay Russo.
I was about to say, Pierre. I remember talking about Quay Russo a lot
all
as a recruit.
Those young guys and you think about, at linebacker, a former five-star that's at linebacker that's playing really well. And so the talent level's still there. But obviously there's not as many. When you start talking about the second team and third team guys, all of a sudden those guys aren't those guys anymore. And they're playing some younger guys. And so this is a first 8 to 10 minutes of utmost importance for Auburn on Saturday. Because you don't want I'll tell you what they'll do. That is a momentum team. And if you let them get rolling and
they
let them have the play action and success on first down, and then you're in trouble.
Yeah, the bad news is I'd say Auburn only had one game in conference this year where the offense looked pretty good in the first quarter, right? And the good news is it was A&M. Right? It was the most recent.
And here's the thing. Other than Georgia, A&M physically is probably as good up front defensively as anybody you would have placed this year. They don't have elite pass rushers. That was a huge part of that game, is they don't have elite pass rushers. Alabama's got some guys that are more athletic. My guess is that they are going to attack and make Peyton Thorne throw the football and make plays. That would be my guess. I don't think they're going to sit there and let Auburn run the football.
I was going to ask if you think Auburn's going to be able to run the football.
I think they'll be able to run it. But I think Alabama is going to try their best to take that away, however many people it takes. And I think Auburn's going to have some opportunities down the field.
What's your sense of how Thorne's shoulder is feeling? Because I feel like this could be a game where he's called upon to get some yards on the ground.
Yeah, I think it's fine. Did not take a ton of punishment the other night, other than the one big hit where he gets up and points for the first down. And that's honestly about the best hit you want to take, because you're not getting driven into the ground. You get knocked and kind of flown across, but it wasn't as bad. Talked to him this week, and to me he seems fine. I think it would take an act of Congress for him to not play in this game.
I think so too.
And I do think that's one thing too. I'm glad people have an appreciation a little bit more after Saturday for what he hasn't been perfect. He's made some mistakes, but hey, once we got done with post game interviews, we stopped him after he left and said, look, we just want to thank you, because that guy has come in every post game, good or bad, lots of bad, and sat there and answered questions. And then he comes in on Tuesdays and talks to us every week, and he does it. And it would be easy to go, nah, I'm not doing this anymore, and he hadn't done it. I think he has set an example for young guys, and Eugene Asante and Dory Mayusi, these guys, and we saw some. I think those guys have set a big example, even though it hasn't worked out with wins and losses, about how to deal with adversity and to not give up, because this team hasn't quit at all. I think that's been a big part of things.
I think it's easy to and even, again, trying to stay positive, Bill, but I think it's easy and even lazy to blame a lack of leadership on field or the lack of leadership in the locker room.
Oh yes.
Some of the
ridiculous things that we heard or read about his teammates don't like him, they don't respect him. Peyton Thorne's an outstanding leader.
Yeah.
He is an outstanding leader. He takes it very seriously being a team captain.
Well, and the flip side of that is like, well, you know, for that matter, then Auburn basketball should have issues because they had an issue, you know, on a flight going to a game. Don't seem like they have any issues to me.
No.
Those are things that happen. Do you wish it wouldn't? No, you do. But that's part of life. You get over it, you move on, and you move. It's like brothers. I mean, some of the worst fights I've ever seen were two brothers fighting each other. But you step in between those guys, and all of a sudden you're the one that's in trouble.
Luke Deal's another one. I would throw out there as far as a bunch of those guys that have stuck around
and helped to build this thing.
All right, we'll get to our bottom of the hour break. Bill, Dan, Jason Caldwell from Auburn Undercover. Right now, a break in the basketball game as they're taking a look at I don't know exactly what maybe the little bump out of bounds, but Auburn's up 14. 31-17 with 6:37 to play in the championship of the Maui Invitational. We're back with more. Come on in and join us here on the Wednesday Drive. Is it because...
The Grammy-winning songs, the Tony-winning moves, the electrifying Broadway sensation. Ain't Too Proud.
Live. Call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into The Drive. 20 minutes away from 5 o'clock here on this Wednesday, and things going really well for Auburn basketball. They are up 39-19 over Memphis. Memphis has taken its second first half timeout after another Auburn run. And the Tigers, I mean, are just they're just playing so well. Jahni Broome is going to be the MVP. Is there any question who the MVP of this tournament is? Jahni Broome has 14-6 right now. In 14 minutes, he has 14 points.
Yeah, he's not just making a case for MVP of the Maui.
But he also
right
has
now. He's making a case that he's the front runner
He's leading both teams in assists as well.
Here's the thing about it. I've seen Hunter Dickinson play. Hunter Dickinson is an average basketball player that just happens to be a mammoth guy.
Yep.
I mean, he's a good player.
You know, people said that about Zach Edey, and I thought they were incorrect. And I think that he's going to have a longer.
I think Zach Edey's a much better
player
than Hunter Dickinson.
Okay,
I do. I think Zach Edey can move and he can play defense and he can do those things. I just think Hunter Dickinson's a big guy. But I mean, they'll be good. It's crazy to me though. I mean, like Alabama beats Houston last night.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there's any question that two of the best five teams in college basketball are Auburn and Alabama.
I think you're right.
I don't think there's any question.
You're right.
And it's not a fluke. It is remarkable to see what's happened in this state in basketball. It's just incredible.
And there are three respected national – I mean, more than three, but I'd say that the main three, the oldest three National Player of the Year awards, AP, Sporting News, and – the Naismith, like those are three organizations that give a National Player of the Year. Auburn has never had a National Player of the Year recipient from any of those organizations. I think Jahni Broome is Auburn's best shot at that, maybe ever. Like this, the start he's having, this is the best shot Auburn's ever had to have someone win that award, which is that's rarefied air even among the best players in Auburn history.
Yeah, these are things that help that.
Eyes
help that.
That's the top story on their halftime report. Broome's big start at Maui
Championship. That's it. It's eyes. You have these games that everybody's watching. You've played Houston already. You'll be at Duke next Wednesday night.
You have two top five wins, three top 15 wins.
You still got Duke and Purdue coming.
And Ohio State.
Ohio State, are they still ranked?
Yeah.
You look and you go, this team could play six ranked teams before you ever start SEC play. You win most of those, you're in great shape.
I mean, yes, what we were talking about preseason was, you don't want to lose them all.
You're 4-2.
You want to
split them.
If you split them, you're in really good shape.
You split them, you have if you do what you're supposed to do in the league.
It's going to feel like a disappointment if you split it.
Crash, absolutely now. Yeah, and so, yeah, it's – yeah, but Broom has – we're talking about it in a break. These are guys that aren't in college basketball 5 years ago that you're now keeping because of NIL, that are older, they're more – that's exactly why we were talking about it, is people have asked about this signing class and going, what do you do because you got 9 or 10 guys to get? You better go find another guy like that because young guys – cannot compete with those guys consistently. You might have a guy every once in a while, mm-hmm. night in, night out. The older veteran guys are going to just be better than young guys, even if the young guy's more talented.
If history's any indication, what Bruce Pearl is going to do is he's going to find one of the best rim protectors in a mid-major league. He's going to go find one of the top Summit League or Sun Belt or America East. Yeah, I mean, he might go find
someone. Yeah, history would tell you that, although now you would think that
Those guys would come looking to you.
Auburn and Bruce Pearl would be extremely attractive to anyone 100. Who wants to up their stock
if you're a
in
big
size
man,
as a
big Yeah, if
big
you're
man.
A big man coming, then I would say that Auburn would have to be top one of two or three choices.
Yeah, just Walker Kessler, Jahni Broom.
Bruce has had success with guys coming from other major conference programs, too, in the sense of Walker Kessler coming from North Carolina. KD came from Georgia. Miles Kelly is coming from Georgia Tech. But he's really specialized in, and I think there was a comment on the broadcast last night about it. Mm-hmm. You know, about his, you know, the idea that players who have never played major conference ball before, when they come into his program, tend to be more appreciative of the opportunity than five stars or players who are coming in from, and I don't need, you don't want to, you know, I don't know if he's singling anyone out in particular there, but I think you look
he's
at
just talking about how hungry they are,
yeah,
and not other, feeling that
he used to have to recruit. He used to have to recruit guys out of high school who maybe were, you know, their only way into the SEC was Auburn,
correct.
And then he's got some guys now where, you know, Auburn was the first one to believe they could play major conference ball, whether it's Chaney or Chad or Jahni. You know, and you know, coming from very different places, and that's it tends to work out for him.
The other part of that too is you get guys. You mentioned it with Todd Pettiford. If you get a bunch of those guys who are saying, "Hey, I want to be a part of a winning team," and what do you need me to do? I'll be that guy. We talked about Jahni passing the basketball, doing those things. Then you buy into a culture that is, "Hey, whatever the team needs, I'll do." And you think about Dylan and think about Chaney Johnson coming off the bench. And, you know, you look at Tahad and going, "Hey, look, I just want to win." He didn't have to worry about his shots and how different it is. And so that's part of it, too, is going to get the right guys. You're like, "Hey, would you love to have every one of the five-star guys?" Absolutely you would. Does that make you a better basketball team?
Not
I don't think it does in this day and age. No.
I mean, you've seen that at Kentucky a couple of times.
Hey, those schools have quit doing it.
Yep.
Duke has transfers. Kentucky's transfers. Mm-hmm. They've quit doing it.
I've heard two in the last week, because we're talking about this, Jason, I've heard two incredible stories about playing basketball internationally in sort of places where the money sounded good initially, but then things don't go the way they planned. We've got other stuff. I mean, we got recruiting stuff to get. I don't want to waste too much time, but I'll tell you one, Jason. So there was a player – I heard a story about a player who hurt their knee playing in a country that was formed at some point after the Soviet Union broke up. And the coach expressed a lot of concern and said, "All right, let me drive you to this doctor I know." And it was the airport. It was the doctor.
And they flew him out.
Bought her a plane ticket home. And that was the die he expressed.
Well, I'd probably trust that doctor a little better, too.
No, there's
no doctor, just a plane.
Yeah, it's just a plane ticket.
Honestly, I was talked to Jeremiah the other day, and I was thinking about like a guy like Sonny DeShare, and you go, in this era, playing minor league baseball or playing overseas versus having another year of NIL, yeah, much better life in college than you do playing minor league sports or even playing overseas right now. When you think about the money versus what you're paying out, the lifestyle you're living, where you're living, you have all your money. Like, this is – it's what it's turned into.
Even pre-NIL, wasn't that sort of what people were saying about being a minor league baseball player versus being someone
conference? If you get a big signing bonus, you go, "Hey, absolutely." You know, you do it and you go into minor leagues, you still made your signing bonus. If you're trying to – hold on, and they signed you for a box of baseballs and some cards, it's not a great life.
No.
And so, yes, even then, baseball, but the problem was in baseball, you're still paying part of your scholarship where you're like, okay, I'm making $5,000 or I'm spending $75,000. Now you go, well, I'm not having to spend anything and make a little money. Well, I might make the same amount of money. Now you've evened it up some from a baseball perspective, whereas basketball, football, you always had at least the scholarship to hold you over.
All right, we need to get to our final break of hour number one. And, yes, we'll talk a little recruiting and more in our final segment with Jason as we continue here with the Wednesday Drive.
What's up, guys? This is Bailey from 12K Salon. Are you unhappy with your...
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Drive, final segment of hour number one, and our final few minutes with Jason Caldwell from Auburn Undercover. And Jason, a week from today, you were just talking about it a while ago, a week from today is going to be crazy. It's signing day, Auburn-Duke basketball that day, 7A state championship game is that day. I mean, there will be an awful lot going on, and Auburn looking to hang on to, if not add to, an outstanding signing class.
Yeah, no, and you had a lot of those guys on campus last weekend for that party that happened, and that was a big deal when you think about it. And you know, you think about some of the guys that you're like, okay, what's it going to look like? Jared Smith was back, and so that was big. Tavares Dice was another guy that Florida's been trying to make a push for, and I feel good about Dice. I think he's solid. Jared, that'll be an interesting one. I think Auburn's still in good shape, but South Carolina has been the school
that's really kind of been
there from the beginning. And they played really good defense.
South Carolina's got some guys like that.
They do, and so I think that
Auburn could use.
Yeah,
guys like
so
that.
I think that those are two that I look at and go, okay. But you start looking on the flip side of that, and Naeem Alford's the first guy that comes to mind. Mm-hmm. He visited four times for games this year, and came back. You know, I think for him, you look at the young secondary. Having Caleb Harris and having Anquan Fagans committed and Eric Winters committed, and you look at the guys playing right now, and all of a sudden you're going, okay, man, we got a chance to have the best secondary in the country. I want to go be a part of that. I think Auburn has a great shot at Naeem Alford. Do they get him? We'll see. I think they got a great shot. I think they got a great shot with Darion Smith too, defensive lineman from St. Francis Academy up there, because he's got two guys that are recruiting him, three really. Wayne Henry's the young guy, but Bryce Diaz and Blake Woodby retweets Auburn women's basketball scores and doing all kind of stuff. Bryce Diaz is awesome. I mean, that guy's going to be he's going to be Eugene Asante. He's going to be that energy guy. That's who he's going to be. A little bit bigger already. Mm-hmm. But those are two guys I think about when I go, okay, what does this look like down the stretch? To me, people ask about, you know, Deuce, and I'm like, all I know is that guy drove back last weekend and was on campus for the ULM game after playing a Friday night playoff game, and he drove in from South Mississippi and made it for 11:45. That's all I needed to know. He was there Saturday. Feel good about that one. I think Auburn's still in good shape there. You know, and you just go, can you find a couple? Will something probably happen? Yeah, it probably will, because that's the world we live in now. And somebody might lose out on a guy and says, all right, well, hey, we got an extra $300,000 we're going to give you. Those are things you can't account for. Mm-hmm. Will that happen? Could that happen? Yeah, it could. But I think this class is going to be really good. And if you had a couple of these guys late, especially a Naeem Alford, you start talking about being 3-4 in the country for a class. That'd be pretty remarkable. And to me, lines of scrimmage is a strength. That defensive front, if you get these
guys, add Darion Smith.
Add Darion Smith. I mean, we're going to go watch Antonio Coleman Friday night. Obviously, we've seen, you know, Malik Autry. We've seen, Jordan Crawford at Parker. Hopefully, those guys will win, and they'll be playing each other if they do. It could be Saraland versus Parker for a state championship
Marshall.
Game. Nate Marshall, that's the other one.
Visited
Texas last weekend. That's probably the other question mark guy you look at going, kind of see what it looks like. But I think from an Auburn perspective, they need guys that, And he's the guy that's going to play.
Right.
But I think the other guys are that have a chance to come in and play earlier. I think Jordan Crawford is at the top of that list because I think he's when you look at him, Christian calls him the brick, and you look at him, he's built like a brick. And then you grab onto his arm and it feels like a brick. I mean, I think he is a guy that is that havoc guy that they haven't had in a quite a while.
You're saying he's a brick house?
He is a brick house. Yeah. He is in every way. Because somebody's like, how tall is he? About 6 foot. I'm like, no, he's taller than that. He's just that wide too, that it looks like.
That's one for the band to learn, or maybe the DJ to put on every time.
Well, you walk those guys out there, and if they bring that class in to go with, you know, when you think about Malik Blockton on campus and Amaris Williams and having Keldrick Falk back, and all of a sudden you go, okay, do like you did this year in the secondary. You do it on the front, up front, and go, all right, turn it loose and go play.
Great stuff, Jason. As we said, there's so much going on that for folks to be able to keep up with.
Absolutely. And right now, it's Black Friday sale. So if you've never subscribed, it's 75% off right now. So it's like $29 for a year. If you've never signed up, this time to do it. So come check us out, auburnundercover.com. Follow me on Twitter, @ITJason. And lots of stuff going on. Come check us out.
Happy Thanksgiving, Jason.
Y'all too.
The Grammy-winning songs, the Tony-winning moves, the electrifying Broadway sensation, Ain't Too Proud, The Life and Times of the Temptations. December 3rd through 4th, Gouge Performing Arts Center in Auburn. Tickets available at the box office and online.
Live with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7.
And online at ESPNAU.com.
To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome into hour number two of the Wednesday Drive. The show before Thanksgiving. We are off tomorrow. We will be back on Friday. And we are on, we understand, with basketball going on at the same time. And man, is Auburn basketball playing at a tremendous level. I mean, they really are here. They already have 3 wins over ranked teams this year, 2 top 5 wins, and they're playing right now for the Maui title and are just having their way with the Memphis Tigers.
This all goes back to that day, you know, in late spring when Jani Broome decided to play one more year of college basketball, and you got the sense that Auburn could retain a lot of its core from last year's team and maybe even improve that core, not just with the players developing over one more offseason in the program, but also by going out and adding pieces at guard and around the perimeter that can, and maybe even, a veteran piece that could help replace Jalen Williams. I mean, we're watching this team, you know, during this tournament, and not to sell last year's team short, but this team has seemingly gotten better in every way. From a team that consistently contended for the SEC Conference Championship, won the SEC tournament, and went into the NCAA tournament as one of the favorites to win it all. They've gotten better, and I don't know how many of the teams, if you look at the teams that were probably among the top 10, top 12 to win it all going into last year's tournament, I don't know how many of those teams have gotten better from where they were in that moment. I think Auburn has.
Auburn definitely has. They don't turn the ball over. I mean, they just are very good. I mean, they had that one. There was a turnover. Auburn only had 4 turnovers in the first half. One of them was when Tahad Pettiford thought a player was breaking one way, and he made a bounce pass and went out of bounds. The other one, a second one. But they've only had 4 turnovers in the first half, and they have so many more weapons offensively. Jani Broome is better than he's ever been in the first half here, but where, by the way, they're about to start the second half, and Auburn is up 16, 47 to 31. Jani Broome in the first half, 15 points, including 2 of 4 from outside the three-point line, 11 rebounds, and 5 assists at the half. 15, 11, and 5. To give you an idea, Memphis as a team has 11 rebounds. Jani has as many rebounds as the Memphis team. Auburn doubling Memphis in rebounds, 22-11. So Janai is a much better passer. He's improved his outside shooting, and he's even better. I mean, he gets the ball on the low block. It's going to be a foul or a score is what you feel like just about every time. But Auburn has so many more weapons that he can distribute the ball to. If they sag back in on him, he's kicking it out to Chad Baker-Mazzara, to Miles Kelly, to Denver Jones, to Tahad Pettiford. I mean, and all those guys can shoot.
Yeah, I mean, you think about Auburn shooting 51%, but that doesn't really tell the story because Auburn has 10 offensive rebounds in this first half. And so Auburn has missed 17 shots, and they've gotten an offensive rebound.
10 of them.
On 10 of those 17 misses, they have more offensive rebounds then Memphis has defensive rebounds.
Yeah, and so, they have almost as many offensive rebounds as Memphis has rebounds.
When you have more offensive rebounds than your opponent has defensive rebounds, it is. I mean, you're in command position down low. And for Auburn, it's not just Janai, who came into this tournament as one of the top rebounders in all of college basketball. It has been. I mean, Chad had a big putback off of a Janai miss. Auburn's ability to attack the offensive glass, rebounding had been a weakness of previous Bruce Pearl teams at Auburn. It had been, you know, I think one of the schools of thought was Auburn was so aggressive defensively, trying to block shots and trying to contest, that they didn't always prioritize going and getting the defensive rebound after the shot went up. This Auburn team, not only do they play tight defense during the possession, but they have been on both ends of the floor. That they have been a really, really impressive rebounding team. And if this team is, if they're doing all the things they can do and they're showing a killer instinct in transition and in rebounding and when they're out on defense, it's going to be too much for a lot of teams on their schedule.
Oh, you're absolutely right. I mean, this the depth of this team, again, they're going with a nine-man rotation again today. 8 of the 9 scored in the first half. Dylan Cardwell with 8 points in the first half. I mean, the scoring is spread around, but then it's Janai, and who knows who is going to step up and also have a big ball game. But defense is the thing Auburn has. That's why the Iowa State game was such an outlier in that first half. Iowa State scored 49 points in the first half, but then Auburn held them to 32. And they've held Memphis to 31 here in the first half. That's what you expect out of Auburn night in and night out, and that's what will help you get some wins when everybody isn't hitting their shots.
Although I would even think Memphis has played, I mean, so some of the numbers would tell you, like, they've played okay defensively.
Yeah.
7 turnovers is probably a little bit too many, but, I mean,
that's,
shooting.
That's not atrocious.
44%, 50% from three. I mean, granted, they only went 1 of 2, but, I mean, they're getting buried when Auburn has the ball.
Like, yes.
This Memphis team today, I mean, they need to get a stop without fouling, and it is just over and over. I mean, like we said, I mean, if you just look at it as a number, you know, how many Auburn possessions resulted in points, right? Like, with 10 offensive rebounds baked into the numbers, it was a huge half for Auburn offensively. And I don't know if it's and yes, a lot of that starts with Janai Broome there in the center, but this Auburn team is, and you mentioned, Bill, the unselfishness and the
willingness to make that extra pass.
Well, thinking about previous Bruce Pearl teams, even last season, like, I think shot selection was often a criticism. Like, I think people often wondered if shot selection was a something to, you know, that was a weakness of the team. This team seems to be hyper focused on taking high percentage looks. I think they've gotten more into, they're not adverse to the mid-range jumper, but I think they've gotten more into the idea of being a 3-point and or around the basket.
Yeah.
You know, threes.
High percentage twos or threes.
Yeah, threes, dunks, and you know, threes, dunks, and free throws, which is very, I mean, Alabama is, you know, like, you know, leading college basketball, presumably in that sort of, you know, in that attack. But
yep.
Auburn is, and when you've got some guys that are willing to take the mid-range shot and make it, like, Chad's got those baseline.
Denver does too.
Denver, Miles, you know, even Chaney.
Chaney's got a really good mid-range to the goal.
Yeah, I think game. There are, and that's something. When so many teams are focusing on only shooting at the 3-point line in the basket, if you've got mid-range weapons, they can really be helpful as a, you know, as a punch that the defense can't defend, as something the defense doesn't see very often. And for Auburn, yeah, they have multiple guys that not that the mid-range game is going to be is going to be the focus of this Auburn offense or anything, but Auburn has multiple guys in the mid-range that are capable of that are capable of producing.
Auburn out to they scored the first basket. Dylan Cardwell, if I'm not mistaken, his career high is 12. He has 10. He got the first bucket for Auburn in the second half. We'll keep you updated on that. Love to hear from you as we head into the final hour here before Thanksgiving. We're taking tomorrow off. We're getting the day off for Thanksgiving, as we hope everyone has that opportunity to spend some time with their families tomorrow on Thanksgiving.
You know, I'm glad, and we can tell some Iron Bowl stories because I want to ask you about previous visits to Tuscaloosa for this thing as well. Mm-hmm. But I'm glad that it has the opening. Remember when the trend was like let's open our shops on Thursday night for Thanksgiving and let's move.
Right.
It used to be a big sort of push for opening on Friday morning for Black Friday deals, doorbusters, and all that stuff. And then that turned into midnight on Thursday night, Friday morning when places would open. And then that pushed into 7 p.m., 6 p.m.
Now you have Black Friday deals all week.
It's been Black Friday since Halloween. Yeah, since Halloween ended. But at least we're not sort of for the folks on the front lines of retail, not having to come in at a 4 p.m. or a 6 p.m. on Thanksgiving. Yeah, like Bill said, I hope you have the day off tomorrow. If you don't, then it's probably a job that needs folks out there, and so we appreciate you going out there and providing your service on Thanksgiving Day.
334-321-1390. That's the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar. Love for you to join in. And Dylan Cardwell has just set his career high by hitting a three. 13 points for Dylan Cardwell. How about Janai and Dylan?
Memphis had cut it to 10 when Dylan hits that three.
Yeah.
Memphis cut it to 13.
No, they cut it to 13. Yeah. Oh, they only gave him a two. He only got a two, so he's tied his career high. I am confused there. The lines in Maui.
I believe high school gyms use.
So they've got the double lines, and I guess his toe was on.
They've got the triple lines, Bill, because they've got the lines for
line I at they got, the top of the key, another they, line about a foot further than that, and then a third line.
I believe they have a girls' high school, a boys' high school, and a college
line. He did get the three.
Okay.
They've given him taken away the point every time I look up there. But anyway, Auburn leading by 15, 51-36 as they're underway in the second half. And again, yes, we'd love for you to join in, 334-321-1390. That's the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar. In hour number two of the Drive, which is presented by the good folks at the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care, with locations in Auburn and Opelika, on the web at orthoclinic.com.
You want to get to the phones?
Let's do it.
I think we got Josh hanging on. What's up, Josh?
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Pretty good.
Hey, happy Thanksgiving to y'all. Hope y'all enjoy your time tomorrow. Me and my coworker, we were watching the game while we had our last hour at work. Watched it last night, and I hadn't gotten to really watch any of the other games, so these two last games were the ones I got to really sit down and watch, and it's just fun. It's just a fun basketball team. It's enjoyable to watch. I'm just really excited. There's just a lot of pieces, and feel like if health, as long as everybody can stay healthy, I just really feel good about this team, and they just seem like they're really playing together and buying into what Bruce is selling. Just wanted to hear some more thoughts. I know y'all were just talking about it, but hear y'all's thoughts on the basketball team and kind of going forward. I know we got Duke next week, and just really excited, really enjoy what Bruce has built. It's just super fun. And but anyway, War Eagle guys, have a good Thanksgiving.
You too, Josh. Thanks for calling. And yeah, I mean, obviously Janai is the key. He is absolutely the key, because Auburn can do some things because of Janai being on there. He has to be the focal point. I mean, he just has to be. And right now, by the way, Janai's got 15 points and 13 rebounds.
Called for a travel there? Or was it setting up an alley-oop, and, and it seemed to lead to an Auburn? What's going on? What's the call here?
I guess they did one.
Offensive foul maybe on the
– Oh, yeah, maybe because the guy stuck his head under his elbow.
That's pretty tough
when you're 7 feet tall. A guy can stick his head under your elbow and you get a foul called on you.
We had Jeff. We were about to get to Jeff. He just dropped out.
Yeah, Jeff,
out,
if you get a chance, give us a call back. But, no, I mean, he's right. I mean, Auburn, no team, you know, really feels like, oh, they can afford to lose one of their better players to injuries. But as deep as this Auburn team is, there are just so many weapons. And we've talked about all the guys. And one of the things we've said is, well, you know, Dylan's not a guy that's going to give you a lot of points. But Dylan's got 12 here with 16-plus minutes to go.
Memphis banks in a three to get it down to 12.
Down to 12, yep. And that's about as close as they have been.
Yeah.
That's as close as they have been since the first few minutes of the ball game.
Just, you know, the first few minutes of the second half were pivotal in both of Auburn's victories in Maui early on. And
so
I
he denied double teamed and he gets it to Chris Moore for the layup.
For the first time in this tournament, I'd say it had been close to even as far as the first few minutes of the of the second half here. Although the Janai just six assists now for Janai today as he's
again. I mean, he's four assists away from a triple double,
and he's somebody who, I mean. Earlier in his Auburn career, I think that a willingness to recognize the double team and pass out of it was something that it was still evolving in his game, and he has turned into such a dangerous passer on top of being an incredibly effective back to the basket scorer.
Yeah, it is. But as Josh said, this is a fun team to watch. It's fun to watch good teams. I mean, and Auburn is a very, very good team, and it's.
Auburn's had good teams, though. I think there's something different about this. Like, there's something, you know.
The chemistry on this team really appears to be.
There's Ferguson right there. You see him in the blue?
I sure do see his ball cap.
Yeah, that's Ferg.
But one of the guys that the announcers last night were talking about that doesn't get a lot of – I mean, a lot of people go, why is he playing? Then you see Chris Moore make a couple of plays. I mean, he just came up with a steal, which turned into a three-pointer by Denver Jones.
I've been around enough basketball coaches the last couple of years and getting to do this job and getting to do the stuff with Troy Bill. I'll tell you the exact answer to the question. If anybody wants to know why Chris Moore is out there, because his coach does not have to worry at all about whether or not he's going to play at maximum effort. Like his coach.
Well, you know, something I've noticed, I haven't seen many games when Chris Moore is in the game that he's not a plus in the plus,
I mean,
plus
his
column.
His willingness to play at maximum effort within the boundaries of the other four guys out there and defend and rebound and run. And I mean,
give up his body trying to get the basketball.
You need more than that. But you also, like, as you know, from your five guys out there, you need more than that. But from one individual out there with four shooters around him, you'll take dirty work.
Oh, yeah.
You'll take dirty work effort. And Chris Moore, you know, who Ferg likes to call the junkyard dog, like, he's somebody that gives a lot of that to. And it was Corey Alexander, the guy doing the previous games, who I think it was during the Iowa State game that Corey Alexander relayed the story that he had watched Chris Moore play in high school, covering Arkansas high school playoff ball a couple of years ago, and said he was struck by Chris Moore's effort then, and ever since then as a college basketball player, and he said nobody in major conference college basketball plays harder than Chris Moore, and I tend to agree. I mean, that's one of the reasons. Like, to, you know, that's a long story short version of the, you know, to answer the question. Yeah, why is Chris out there? Because he's doing everything a coach wants. You know, you have very little control over how you shoot. You know, whether or not, you know, once right. you
and he's very unselfish too. I mean, it's not like he's a bad shooter.
Yeah,
but I mean, that's not what he's in the ball game for. He knows there are other guys.
But the things you can control on a game to game basis, the things you can decide to do at the max every single night, Chris Moore's always doing them.
One thing, let's see, they're at the under 16 timeout, and Dylan Cardwell does have a career high. They have reviewed it and given him a three.
It seemed like a three.
They've given him a three, and it's 56-41 at the under 16 timeout. And we're where we need to take a timeout. We need to get to our first break of hour number two. Come on in and join us here on the Wednesday Drive.
Dixie Electric Plumbing and Air rallies for you.
90 toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Wednesday Drive, 23 minutes after 5 o'clock. Let's see, a couple of little updates for you. I believe we're still going to be able to have Barrett on Friday. David Paschal, who's usually with us on Thursday, is going to be with us in the 5 o'clock hour on Friday.
What do you think, as we got the Iron Bowl on Saturday, mm-hmm. along with all the other rivalry games, Auburn leading Memphis by 17 as they approach. That's under 14 minutes left in the basketball game, although Memphis scores to cut it back to 15. College football playoff rankings last night. What did you think, Bill? Any surprises?
That's about what I expected. I mean, we talked about it a little bit yesterday. That's sort of what I expected. Clemson and Alabama, the first two out right now. And you'd go, I've seen some people go, but wait, no, Clemson's number 12. But they'd be the first team out because of the way that the playoff is set up.
You know, I was raising this question a couple of weeks ago, and people looked at me like I was crazy. But I think folks are starting to realize what I was talking about. There's no guarantee the Big 12 is getting a team
in
this thing.
You're right.
I was looking at it a couple weeks ago, and I said, you know, if Boise and Tulane keep winning, mm-hmm. you could have five conference champions ranked ahead of the Big 12's champion. And now you're looking at
it. Yes, because they didn't say it's not the Power Four and another conference. It's the top five conference champions in the rankings.
I mean, and with Tulane now ranked ahead of every Big 12 team except Arizona State in these things, I mean, you've got the Kansas State-Iowa State game this weekend. It's almost, I mean, you would need, the Big 12 needs Arizona State to keep winning, and they probably need Iowa State to keep winning too and play mm-hmm. for the Big 12 championship game and hope that the Iowa State-Arizona State winner is ranked ahead of Tulane in this thing. If not, you could have a scenario where five conference champions.
I would think if they both win, then the winner is going to be ranked higher because Tulane doesn't have an opponent like that to play.
Tulane does not. Memphis is 9-2. You know, Tulane's next opponent.
I know, but
9-2 Memphis team that probably should be that. You know, Memphis has a decent argument for inclusion
to be in the top 25
for inclusion
for sure.
in this top 25 as well. And yet, so I do think that's something to watch. The ACC. With right now ACC in position to get two teams in.
Right.
If things implode for the ACC this weekend, Syracuse, Miami, SMU's
South Carolina, Clemson.
And SMU's got Cal, I think.
Yes, they do.
You know, if there's some havoc regarding upsets in the ACC, that opens the door for an SEC for a 9-3 SEC team to get into this thing. If one of these ACC teams were to falter, then suddenly you're looking at a 9-3 SEC team, whether it's Alabama, whether it's South Carolina, whether it's Ole Miss. Mm-hmm. Some of that depends on what happens this Saturday.
South Carolina can make a really good statement for themselves with a win over Clemson. South Carolina stands a better chance of helping themselves more with a win, I think, Saturday.
Ole Miss would
probably. But they've got two spots to jump.
Ole Miss would probably need the following.
Yeah, Ole Miss needs more help.
But here's what Ole Miss. I think a South Carolina win against Clemson helps Ole Miss because Ole Miss beat them.
Right.
I think Georgia winning the conference would help Ole Miss because then you have a win over SEC.
Auburn beating Alabama would help Ole Miss.
That's what I was about to say. I think Georgia winning the conference would help Ole Miss because then you have a win over SEC champion, mm-hmm. Georgia, a team that may be the favorite going into the college football playoff. And then the third thing would be, I think Alabama not looking impressive against Alabama or against Auburn while Ole Miss dismantles Mississippi State. You know, if they can turn that into a bake-off where they clearly look better, that would help Ole Miss sort of campaign in the eyes of the voters. It feels like a long shot.
It feels like a really long shot for Ole Miss. It really does.
But I don't know if any of the 9-3 SEC teams should feel great.
No, they all need help. You know, all need some help.
The one that should feel the best about their situation incredibly is A&M, because at least A&M says we can win two games.
Right.
And make the college football playoff. If you beat
it's, now the thing playoff, is they have to win two though. I mean,
have to do it against teams that are probably going to make the college football playoff. You don't have to beat.
I felt like before the Auburn game, they had a really good shot against Texas, and I still do. I just don't. I don't see them winning two more.
I'll tell you what.
I can
though,
see them beating Texas
if they go into the SEC championship game. They need to win it, and Georgia doesn't.
Yes.
If they go into the SEC championship game, they would need to win that game.
Yes, they do. I mean, they're out. I think they're going to the SEC championship game. They're out as a 9-14.
And haven't we seen in college football especially, when one team doesn't necessarily need to win this one to get to where they want to go. Now, Georgia would need to win it to get to the top four.
Right.
But to be included, Georgia's going in, A&M's not. And that's a scary thing for, because you're going to get, one team's playing like there's no tomorrow, and one team, there very much is a tomorrow no matter what happens. Mm-hmm. And we've seen upsets in conference championship games when teams are in that position where they feel pretty good about their postseason no matter what, and the other team is fighting for their lives to get in. And so that's if A&M – now, if it's Georgia-Texas, they're both in. I mean, they could start wondering about, like, you know, what
who wants to buy, who wants to play the number eight seed and the number four.
I think it gets a lot more, and that's why I'm sort of hoping A&M wins this weekend too, because that makes that game against Georgia
mean even more.
It's far more compelling if you've got it where if it's an elimination game for one team, and I think in the case of A&M, it probably would be.
That sort of leads into I've heard so much different discussion on the mindsets for the Iron Bowl matchup. You know, it's like, well, Auburn's feeling great going in. What's Alabama? Alabama after that performance last week. I don't buy that Alabama is done. I mean, they're playing for a lot. They have to win to have a chance. They've got to have some help, but they have to win, and they need to win impressively. Auburn has to win to continue their season, to be able to play in a bowl game. Seeing where at least one, I think it's two, of Auburn's commitments that are planning on signing with Auburn next week are already talking about, I'm going to be back for bowl practice after we beat Alabama. Well, you got to beat Alabama or they won't be bowl practice. You can come in and sign early and go through winter workouts. But, I mean, there's a lot on the line more than just the bragging rights. Hey, I mean, Auburn is hoping for a dream finish where it would be the perfect storm as far as recruiting. Alabama would love nothing more than to just dash that and dominate Auburn. And that's what they've done in Tuscaloosa over the last 15 years.
You had three SEC playoff contenders upset on the road this past weekend. Mm-hmm. A&M, Alabama.
It is tough to win on the road.
A&M, Alabama, and Ole Miss. I think in the case of A&M and Ole Miss, they looked like playoff contenders for much of that game,
mm-hmm.
and just got outplayed in the fourth quarter against a team that was playing inspired football at home. Alabama, I mean that game, maybe it's a blip, right? Maybe that's a brief hiccup where Alabama doesn't look all that impressive, and they can bounce back and they've still look like a team that was good enough to beat Georgia and do what they did in Baton Rouge. Like, I mean, I have no idea. Like, that's one where I feel like A&M and Ole Miss are gonna be fine in the sense that I think they're both gonna play pretty well this weekend. Alabama should, because they're going back at home.
They should. Well, they haven't lost at home. I was just thinking, and I haven't looked this up.
But they have the most work to do to bounce back from their performances.
They do, but
they've been
way up and way down at other times. I'm just thinking.
That's the most down they've been this season.
Oh, absolutely. It's the most down they've been in a long time. It's 3 points.
You say they've been way up and way down.
Yeah.
That's the most down they've been.
You're right.
This season.
But
Vandy, they
gave up 45 at Vandy.
They did give up 45.
They gave up 45 at Vandy.
But that game was close in the fourth quarter.
Oh, I know.
Oklahoma was the only thing close about that was whether or not the fans were going to wait.
Of the SEC teams that are either in or are the three lost teams hoping to be in, who's lost at home? Texas lost at home to Georgia. I'm trying to think. Has
Ole Miss lost at home to Kentucky, right?
Oh, God, they did. Yeah, they did.
Right?
Yeah, they did. That's the worst home loss by any of these. And that's another reason why Ole Miss really needs some help. I mean, that's the worst home loss of any of these.
Were the South Carolina losses?
South Carolina losses were at Alabama. LSU game was at home.
I was going to say LSU.
But, I mean, that wasn't a terrible loss.
They both want that one back.
Yeah,
so
no
bad.
Kidding.
Ole Miss would love to have the Kentucky game back because they felt like they had. I mean, look, Ole Miss would love to have LSU back. Like, those are two teams that desperately wish they had the LSU beat both of these teams, Bill. Ole Miss and South Carolina, both these playoff contenders.
I don't know how
LSU beat them both.
I don't know how.
And in both cases, you didn't come away thinking the better team won.
No, you're absolutely right. That's what I mean. I don't know how they did, and they're very fortunate. Brian Kelly's very fortunate that they won those games. But that's the thing to keep in mind, Auburn folks. It is tough to win on the road. Now, I know this is a rivalry game, and some crazy things can happen. But Alabama's a 12.5-point favorite or so, or 12-point favorite. There are some reasons for that. Auburn can win, but I think Auburn's going to need some help from Alabama.
And you know, people point out, and it does feel like a different generation of college football when you think about Auburn's success in Tuscaloosa, right? Like the first couple
up until 2008, up through 2006.
Yeah, Auburn had a
Auburn
couple.
Auburn never lost.
2000, 2002, 2004, 2006. Auburn wins a couple in Tuscaloosa since Nick Saban started. Since
2010.
Yeah, since he started collecting talent, you've got that victory in 2010. Other than that, that has been one of the toughest places to get a road win in all of college football. And now Auburn we'll see. Although Hugh Freeze, one of the coaches that has done it, right? Hugh Freeze, one of the few coaches.
That's true. After he beat them in Oxford, everyone said, well, just wait till next year. Nick Saban and Alabama will make you pay for that, and they went into Tuscaloosa and won.
I mean, I think
Hugh Freeze has done that.
A victory
that is not an insignificant point.
No, I think it was a significant factor in deciding who Auburn's coach was going to be a couple of years ago. The idea that this was one of the few guys who had built a team good enough to face down Alabama in Tuscaloosa and win the game when nobody was winning on the road in Tuscaloosa. So we'll see if Hugh Freeze can do it. See if Hugh Freeze can do it again.
Auburn, by the way, as we head to break, Auburn leading Memphis 69-51, under 10 minutes to play. Jani Broom picked up his third foul. He's on the bench with 17 points, 16 rebounds. But CBM Chad Baker-Mazzara has heated it up a little bit. He now has 14 and is Auburn's second leading scorer. We'll get to
One would think that if Memphis is going to make their move, they're going to make a move with
Jani out.
They're going to make a move with Jani on the bench with 9:31 left. In the basketball game.
All right, we'll get to our bottom of the hour break. Come on in and join us in the final 20 minutes here on the Wednesday Drive.
EU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at espnau.com.
Final 15 to 20 minutes here on the Wednesday Drive. Bill and Dan, our thanks to Jason Caldwell being with us in hour number one. Great stuff from JC as well. We talked, obviously, basketball, Iron Bowl, and recruiting. So if you missed any of that, check out the podcast.
Podcasts of The Drive, available wherever you get your favorite podcast. Just search for The Drive with Bill Cameron or go to ESPNAU.com and use the podcast center. You can use the app. There's lots of ways to get the podcast. Appreciate Southeastern Industrial Contractors for their sponsorship of the podcast and the text box.
I was just looking at the box score of the Auburn-Memphis game, which, by the way, Auburn leads by 20 at the under 8 timeout. 7:50 to play in regulation, and Auburn up 73-53. Auburn has played 9 players. All 9 have scored. 7 of the 9 have hit threes. Auburn only has one player who's hit more than one three, and that's Jani Broom. But 6 other players have hit threes. And that sort of gets to what we were talking about. There's so many different players that teams have to be concerned with that because of Jani Broom, they're going to get good looks. I mean, they're going to be able to get good looks and open threes.
And the pressure that you put on the other team when Auburn's offense is playing well is, I mean, it's not only do teams have to worry about getting stops, but Auburn's defense, every shot is difficult.
Constant. Yeah. Constant. I mean, Auburn is just,
they have to work so hard and they have to be so patient to get good shots.
It's such a grind for teams to try to be able to get decent looks. Because Auburn's there, and yes, you mentioned this earlier. Auburn's rebounding so much better. You know, before there would be Auburn would have a lot of blocked shots, but there would be times when, you know, you're worried about the boards. Today, Auburn's dominating the backboards. They're up 30-17 in rebounds. 17 rebounds for Memphis with 7.5 minutes to play in the game. 17 team rebounds. That's unbelievable. All right, 334-321-1390. That's the Drive hotline sponsored by Skybar.
And we got Jeff hanging on.
Hey, Jeff.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Pretty good.
Happy Thanksgiving, Jeff.
Same to you. Same to you. Many more to you and your family. Listen, this Auburn team is going to be trouble this year for people.
No question.
I know it's early in the year, but they're going to be trouble. To go out to Maui and demolish this tournament like they've done, you know, people, the way you would thought, that people think they had no chance of winning, and they've been the class of this tournament.
Oh, you're absolutely right. I mean, they had that rough first half against Iowa State, then outscored them by 20 in the second half, and it's been more of the same ever since then in the last two games.
I said, man, if they come back against Iowa State the way they came back, I said, this field is in trouble. I would have loved to see them. One day we're going to meet UConn. I thought it was going to be in the tournament last year. Darn it. I don't think they want any of us this year.
Not right now. I guarantee you Danny Hurley doesn't want to see Auburn today.
I mean, I don't – look, you were more excited about the possibility of playing UConn in last year's tournament than I was. But this year, you know, they've had to replace a lot. Like I was saying earlier in the show, Jeff, I look at the teams that were the 10, 12 teams – you know, predicted to have the best shot of winning it all in last year's NCAA tournament field. I think Auburn's gotten better. And I don't know how many of those teams that were in that group, you know, if you look at the top 16, like the teams that were ones, twos, threes, and fours in last year's NCAA tournament, I don't know how many of them look at their current team right now and say, we're better than we were going into last year's NCAA tournament. Auburn's better. Like, this Auburn team is better. And that was a team that was a four seed last year that won the SEC tournament and competed most of the season for the regular season title in the SEC. And that's, you know, I want to be careful about this, Jeff, but it feels like Auburn, like you said, much better in multiple important ways.
Yeah, no doubt. As you can make a case, 1-2 in the country, them and Alabama, are the two best programs. I can't wait for Iron Bowl one matchup between these two.
No, you're right.
Absolutely. I mean, it's a short list. I mean, Kansas beating Duke last night, they've got a shot to stay at number one. I think Duke is among the best teams in the country. But it's a short list, of the best teams in college basketball. And Auburn and Alabama are both on it. And Auburn right now might be at the top of it.
Yeah, no doubt. I can't wait for this game at Cameron next week. You can imagine the media coverage. If Auburn wins this tournament, which I think they will, they should be no less than ranked
two.
Number two.
No worse.
I think they may catapult Kansas into number one.
They may, and they may deserve to. But
I think if Duke had beaten Kansas last night, you'd be looking like a new number one team in the country. I think Kansas beating a team like Duke on a neutral floor maybe helps their chances of holding on to it. Alabama beating Houston, I think, helps Alabama make a case that they belong in the top five, and you could but I think Auburn, two with votes for number one would be my expectation, unless Kansas drops a game between now and the next poll.
Yeah, no doubt. And
then if you win at Cameron Indoor, you know, then it could get even harder to deny that they're the number one team.
I agree. Can you imagine? Here it is Iron Bowl week, and we're talking about Maui.
Yeah, amazing. No kidding. And it's not because you know Auburn doesn't have a chance.
We're not talking about
Tuscaloosa either.
Yes. We're not talking about Cameron Indoor because Auburn's in the ACC now because of conference realignment. We're talking about it because that's there are some of the some huge games. Auburn going to Alabama in the Iron Bowl on Saturday, and then a week from today, National Signing Day, Auburn going to Cameron Indoor. Maybe going as the defending champs of the Maui Invitational and going to play.
Well, if they don't, then it's been a troubling last 6 minutes because Auburn's up 21 with 5:45 to play.
It's a long flight back to Maui if Auburn doesn't hold on to this one. But
oh God, this in. I'm listening to Andy calling it. What a week it's been for Andy.
Yeah, no kidding.
I don't know how he's gonna my goodness, the emotions he's been on since Saturday.
Yeah, nonstop brilliance. Nonstop brilliance from Andy Burcham this week, Saturday night, and then three games this week.
He loves Auburn, but they're outside of Bramlett, I haven't heard many announcers, heard a few around the country. There's not a more professional approach than Andy. My goodness, man, he is absolutely amazing.
Oh, no question about it. No, I mean, by all means, Andy Burcham is a shining beacon of light in that industry, and he's getting to enjoy some top-tier performances from the teams that he calls these last couple of days.
Yeah, no doubt. I don't know about anyone else. I don't listen to the TV feed anymore. I strictly listen to Andy and
Randall.
Yeah, called the game. It's a joy to hear them call the game.
And Jason's getting better and better every week in football too. Second year,
yes.
but Jason's Jason getting more comfortable, and he's. Yeah, they were sensational Saturday night.
Yes, they were. Yes, they were. And I'll say this: I know we're going to West Alabama, and the odds are insurmountable, but I'm very confident going into there this week with the squad we have. I think all the pressure's on that team.
I think there's quite a bit. There is indeed quite a bit on Alabama.
Yes. So. Well, look, guys, I'm going to listen to the last few minutes of Andy call it. Hopefully it's a victory. And you all have a good Thanksgiving and War Eagle.
Yep, happy Thanksgiving, Jeff. Thanks for calling.
Yes, take care.
Auburn sticking around a 20-point lead. How about the game for Dylan Cardwell? Dylan Cardwell goes and takes a rest as Auburn's leading scorer. He has 18 points. Dan, he is perfect 8 for 8 from the floor, and he has 5 assists too.
He hit a 3 as well. I mean, one of those 8 shots.
Dylan Cardwell and Jani Broome have combined for 35 points, 3 for 5 from 3, 19 rebounds, and 11 assists. Yeah, how about that?
And a Memphis team that had beaten UConn in the overtime game, and then Michigan State yesterday to get here. I mean, this game has been a pretty thorough Auburn lead for since the opening minutes, and Auburn with 22 a 22-point lead in the final four.
I don't think Auburn has trailed.
It's wire to wire
since the basket by Jani Broome at the end of the Iowa State game.
I mean, it was wire to wire against UNC, and Auburn jumped out to the early lead against Memphis, and they've held Memphis back. I mean, there was no real run in the second half to this point from Memphis that made the game.
They cut it to 12, I think, is as close as they got it in the second half.
But Auburn with timely offense and just tenacious defense. I mean, Auburn holding Memphis to just 63 points.
A Memphis team that expects to score in the 80s. And Jani welcoming himself back into the game with a thunderous dunk. To now retake the team lead in scoring.
Yeah, what a trip to Maui it's been for these guys, and they're going to come back with some hardware.
And I think Jani will. If Jani's not the MVP, there should be an investigation. We'll get to our final break of the day as we continue here with the Wednesday Drive.
A well-made patio cover looks great, helps you enjoy.
ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back in. Final couple of minutes here on the Wednesday Drive. It's been a fun show, even though we've been on while basketball is. That's part of why it's fun. Keep looking up and seeing Auburn continuing to stretch their lead.
Yeah, last time we did this, it was the Yale game, Bill.
Yeah, remember? That was not fun.
Last time we were on the air while the men's basketball team was playing, it was a tournament.
Yeah, it needs to be like this. Auburn's up 18 with 2 minutes to go, 86-68. 4 players in double figures, Jani Broome with 21, Dylan Cardwell with a career-high 18, 14 for Chad Baker-Mazzara, and 11.
Dylan miss a shot?
No, Dylan, 8 for 8 from the floor. He missed a couple of free throws, but 5 assists for Dylan. The top 2 assist men for Auburn today are Jani with 6 and Dillon with 5. So Auburn about to go 7-0, about to be the champions of the Maui Invitational, will just be the third SEC team ever to have won out there in Maui. The other two teams being Kentucky and Vandy.
And another tournament championship for these guys, the SEC tournament champions
Bruce
from last year.
Bruce has a few tournament championships.
Yeah, Bruce getting to enjoy another one, and this one something that no Auburn team has ever done before, as Auburn seeks its first ever Maui Invitational title. Like, as you said, it's been 30-plus years since an SEC team has won this event, and this is the preeminent pre-conference play.
It is
play.
The Thanksgiving week classic.
Yeah, if you're going to win an event in November or December, a team championship in men's basketball, this is the gold standard. Maybe I know some folks are excited about with the NIL opportunities. WBD has made a big investment in the Players Only Championship, which is that's the tournament Alabama and Memphis or Alabama and Houston played in last night. That Players Only thing is positioned. You know, they've got a full field
era.
Yeah, they got a full field thing next year. You know, for you know,
16
you know,
next year.
Yeah, I mean they feel pretty good about that. But right now, Maui the gold standard, and Auburn looking like they're in prime position to bring home the Maui Invitational
and
title.
And Bruce Pearl still coaching as hard with a 15-point lead as he will at any time. So when we return Friday, Coach Don Dunn joins us here in the studio. We will talk with Barrett Salee. We'll also check in with David Paschal as we look back at this, but we look more toward the football weekend. But we want to wish everyone a safe and happy Thanksgiving. Be careful. Enjoy. I'll wear the stretch pants always. Happy Thanksgiving, Dan.
Happy Thanksgiving, Bill.
That's going to wrap it up for the Wednesday Drive. Have a great Thanksgiving, everybody. We are out of here. Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying, skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.